The book of choices, I shut right down. I get having anxiety.
Yeah. Me too. It's like, I totally hear you. Yeah.
It's like going to TGI Friday and they've got like the 35-page menu and I totally can't handle it. And I will tell the server, just tell me what I should eat. Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tarocco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv Company.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, and mortgage loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
Ooh, the singing lender.
Yes, ma'am.
I always want to sing that with you.
I know. Sadly, I do not have a singing I don't have my own jingle yet, but it'll come to me. Too busy doing
it'll
other fun stuff.
To you. Yeah, we've been talking about having our own jingle for like a year and a half now. It'll happen.
Because Gina sings too, but you know, that she's not branding herself that way.
I am not branding myself that way. Not today. I mean, it could change because
the only constant is change.
Exactly. So super excited about this episode that we recorded with another amazing woman your mother warned you about, Frida Rothman. What did you think?
It was a really, the episode, it actually was so powerful. It kind of took me a little bit off guard. Not to give too much away of her story that she shares, but anytime that you bring a subject like Holocaust survivor, that phrase immediately brings imagery into people's minds. And she's just got some really powerful inspiration from her family members. And she is a powerful, yet she knows she's not like a super wide open chick like we are. She was very, she's kind of a more subdued woman your mother warned you about, but powerful in her own right. You know,
and that's okay. You really can be a subdued woman your mother warned you about. I know we tripped her up with that question right at the beginning. Shame on me. But I think we're all very different. We don't all have to be like balls to the wall, brassy, to be that woman.
And the way that she is a woman your mother warned you about is that she talks about how she steps outside the boundaries of what her culture that she is born and raised in and still lives, her very traditional Jewish household, yet she's the CEO. So it's interesting. That makes her a woman your mother warned you about within her own culture.
Yeah, it's so amazing. And just like looking at pictures of her on her Instagram, like she's beautiful. She's got the beautiful family, but she's still in that very cultural role. And yet she's still like the modern woman that we all want to be at that powerful position that she's in. And in her stories, which we won't reveal all of them, I did, to your point, I mean, I had goosebumps through it. I almost had tears. It's certainly not the same with you know, where I come from with my family and how that tells a story on the German side of my family and how they survived. It's a whole nother story of how the Germans, who were not, you know, with Hitler on things, how they had to deal and how they had to try to escape. And thinking about my own grandmother, as she talked about her grandparents, I mean, it really brought back how much I really looked up to my grandmother, because she was this strong German woman who so much was put on her. And I would look at her and go, God, she would be running some major company if she was in modern times. So I think that was really cool, is the foundation of who Frida is.
Today's fabulous episode is brought to you, of course, by Dermavogue, and we thank Dermavogue for keeping us so beautiful, more than we already are. Tell us about Frida.
So I'm going to keep it short and sweet. She is she's born and raised in Brooklyn. She's a second-generation jeweler, a mother of four, an entrepreneur. I love her story about how her husband supports her, but she's designed this, you know, her own jewelry line, and it's based on, she gets inspiration from the city streets around her in Brooklyn. So her jewelry is really cool, and the craftsmanship is really cool. And her goal is to empower every woman to channel the strength, grit, and beauty in the world around us to stay strong in the face of life's many challenges. And she talks about her new line that's coming out this month of Women of Strength. And we'll just leave it at that and jump right into the episode. Sound good?
Sounds good. You guys will enjoy this episode with Frida Rothman.
Frida, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About. I hope you've been warned.
Yes, I have.
Yay. And you decided to join us anyway, so that's perfect. So before we get started, we like to kick off and get a sense of, could you describe a woman your mother warned you about in terms of yourself?
So for me, I grew up in a very Orthodox Jewish neighborhood, and where we were kind of raised and taught to be the wife at home. I'm a mother of four children. And kind of, you know, our husbands, the men in the home, are kind of our kings. We have to do, you know, whatever it is to make our husbands happy. And I have kind of been breaking that glass ceiling here in my community, where I have been doing what I think is great for my business and for my family, and not necessarily following all the rules. And definitely I'm that girl that, hey, you know, don't necessarily do what she's doing, but definitely a leader within the community.
Awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you. So before we jump into talking about your amazing jewelry, which is amazing, and if you need to send us samples, we're cool with that. Mm-hmm. We'll, you know, if we need to wear them on our show, we will do that. Before we talk about that, let's talk a little bit about the story of your family and family adversity that you guys went through, and how that's impacted you as a woman and as an entrepreneur.
It's impacted everything in my life, the way I speak, the way I behave. I grew up in Brooklyn, born and raised there. And all four of my grandparents are Holocaust survivors. My two grandmothers are survivors of Auschwitz. And they have really molded me of who I am today. Their pictures hang in my office. I see their faces every day. And, you know, there's a comment that I always make every day. It's all good. Everything is good. You know, when I look at them and see what they've been through, it really plays such a large has such a large impact on me. My grandparents I grew up across the street from them, and, you know, it taught me on how not to waste things, on how to see the good and how to see the beauty in everyday life, how to focus on the future. Always look ahead. Don't look backwards. Look ahead. Every day is a new day. So they've played a huge role in my life.
Are they all still living?
So my last grandmother passed away about exactly one year ago. So none of them are alive anymore.
Gotcha. Sorry to hear that. But what must that have been like to listen to as a young girl? Like, did they talk about any of that when you were younger? Or did they save those experiences to, you know, when you were a little bit more mature?
So my grandparents really wanted to protect us. They didn't want us to know. They didn't want us to be afraid. My grandfather spoke about his experiences only on Passover. That's kind of when his stories came out. One grandmother, I'm named after her mother, Frida. She used to tell me all the time that I looked like her mother. She was together with her mother in Auschwitz. They did the death march, and then they were in Bergen-Belsen. And my great-grandmother passed away 1 month before liberation. And she would always tell me, "You remind me of my mother." I always say it in her accent. And I kind of feel that responsibility of having her name, which I love and I cherish. And, you know, hopefully I can make her proud every day. And she used to always tell me that I looked like her mother. And she would talk about it all the time, her experiences. And the other grandmother, she was one of nine children, and she was the oldest, and nobody survived. Everybody was killed the day they arrived at Auschwitz. So she barely spoke about it. It was too hard for her. But, you know, as the years gone by, of course, we pulled out as many stories as we could. But for her, it was really, really hard to speak about her experience. So, you know, everybody experienced it differently.
You know, it's interesting, Frida, and I was really interested when I heard about you, because I've got a different side of the story, because my family is from Germany, and they lived in camps as Germans, right? They were displaced. It was a whole different world, and their story of how they got out of Germany. And it's interesting growing up, because the things that they went through, I see how it impacted my mother's behavior, which then got passed down to me, right? Like little things like rationing of food. Yeah. And so my mom became like a pack rat of having food in the freezer because she always wanted to make sure there was food. And I heard all the different stories about ration tickets and things like that. What were some of the things that maybe have passed down as a result of that, that have passed down into your own business as an entrepreneur?
Well, as a business, it really brought down that I always focus on, I'm very optimistic in my business. Even if something happened, something bad happened or something, you know, it was a really rough day, it's okay, it's going to be good. Whatever happened in that situation, it's going to be good. That I think that has, you know, really made an impact on me is the positivity. I think in a business, it's so important to be positive and focus on growth, even though you may seem like it's not going that way, but it's, you know, just moving forward. It's one foot in front of the other. And that's what they did to survive. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really prevalent. I just recently listened to books instead of read them, Viktor Frankl's book. And that was the key in his opinion, that you just had to keep that positive outlook. The people that gave up were the ones that had a harder time than the ones that kept some sort of hope at all times, no matter what.
Yeah.
Same thing in life.
Yeah, exactly.
Because people can be living in a glass house on the top of a hill in a mansion and have everything in the world and still be miserable in today's society. And conversely, they can have just about nothing and still be happy every day. And it's a choice.
Yeah. And you know, it actually, I speak about the inspiration of my collections a lot. I speak about the inspiration being from Brooklyn. And why do I choose Brooklyn as my inspiration? And I purposely choose areas that are super gritty. So it could be the cobblestone streets. It could be the manhole or the pothole, the chain links at the gates that, you know, the garage doors. And I purposely do that. And my kids know that too, to point it out to me, is because my grandparents came here and they were able to find beauty. They were able to continue practicing their faith. They were able to pass that legacy down to us and find beauty in Brooklyn. And I mean, that's directly inspired me to find beauty in Brooklyn itself. So that's played a huge role in my business too.
So let's talk about your business and how you got started. What inspired you to start your business and have this jewelry line?
So I am a second generation jeweler. My family's been in the industry close to 40 years. My dad started this business. His father was a house painter. They did whatever it took to survive. And he started the business on my grandparents' dining room table. He used to tell me how he used to fill up his jackets with Italian sterling silver chain. And he would get in the car with my mom and they would drive across the country and sell the jewelry. And he would come back and with cash in his pocket. And that's how he built his business. And it was always sterling silver in my family. And, you know, it grew and grew. Again, my father was a hustler. He was out there selling, you know, his product. And, you know, even today, as his company is so big, he still has that. He loves that rush of, you know, getting that deal and closing that deal with in business. And he built his business. He sells private label to your Targets of the world, Macy's. And I joined the business after I had gotten married, and he had a lot of smaller clients that would call his company that wanted to manufacture with him. And he was like, I don't, you know, it's too much of a job for us. We can't handle that. We only handle bigger accounts. And I said, how about I take that over and work with these smaller designers and you manufacture through your factories? And he said, go right ahead, start. So I've always been an artist. I've always sketched and painted. I have that art in me. Grew up in the jewelry world. And I said, great, perfect fit. I'll start working with these designers. So I started taking those calls with those smaller designers. We were just a private label. It was my own division of the company. I didn't work under him. It was really my own company, but using his manufacturing. And that's kind of how I started, was working with other designers, designing for them, with them. And then I found myself really designing a lot for these designers. And my husband said, you realize that you're doing a lot of the work for a lot of these designers. Why don't you try and do and design your own collection? And that's kind of how the Frieda Rothman company started. When I started, I obviously was very nervous. I wasn't sure, you know, who's going to like my collection. I don't know, but I did know the industry very well. And I was taught that when you are looking to launch a collection or whatever it is, whatever product you want to feature, look for that white space. What is somebody else not doing? And because I had that background information, I was working with other designers, I knew it so well. You had your really high-end fine jewelers and you had your, you know, your low-end costume, but there was nothing really in between. And that's kind of how I said, okay, I think we have something. And I went to the first year, we did the traditional trade shows. I went to my first trade show and I had met the buyer from Nordstrom. And of course, it didn't happen right out of the gate. It did happen within year one in 2013. The Nordstrom team opened the brand and started the collection in 25 doors. And they said it was only the second time in the history of the company that they launched in 25 doors, because it's usually 5, 7, 10. And I remember looking at my husband and saying, okay, I think we actually have something here. I think we can continue to build this brand and continue to build this product. And a funny story about the actual name, I was definitely more timid and shy. I was very nervous with putting my name on the brand. And it originally started with my three children's name, Belargo, we called it, because I was like, I can't have my name out there. I'm too shy. I can't speak. I can't do this podcast, you know? And I was really hesitant. And my husband went ahead and he ordered about $50,000 worth of displays with my name splashed all over it. And he goes, there you go. You're the designer. You're the name. You're going to do this. And of course, I thank him so much for giving me the courage to do it. But it was hard. It was hard for me to put my name on something and then speak for it. And, you know, of course, I've grown into it, but it's always my biggest fear. Like, am I ready for it? You know? So that's kind of how we started the brand and started the business.
Okay. Well, first of all, kudos to your husband, right? I mean, I think that's really amazing, especially based on your culture and how you're raised. And it sounds like not only do you kind of run against the pack, so does he.
He absolutely does. Absolutely does. It's very unusual. It's very unusual for him. I'm actually the CEO of the company. And he's the president. So, you know, for him to even put me on that pedestal, it's huge. It's huge within the community. And I'm so excited about it because I think you always need, you know, the first people to make that step. And I really think that we are showing the younger generation of how it's done.
Yeah, I imagine that you have to be a huge inspiration within your own community just because of that.
Absolutely. No, I'm so proud to be sitting in this chair and I'm so proud of him for understanding and realizing and being able to do that. You don't even know how difficult it is. I mean, he doesn't see it as difficult. He gets it. But, you know, within the community, it's not usually that way.
Have you seen any pushback, direct pushback from others in your community about that situation that you're the...
I've only seen support. People
awesome.
Are so excited. So excited. Like, oh my God, that's amazing. But it's like you kind of have to show them like it's okay. You know, you can still stay within whatever it is. I still keep Shabbat and do all those things. But they're like, go girl. Like they're so excited to see that kind of movement and to see that growth within the community. So, you know, it's showing my daughters too. It's showing my son.
Yeah.
How you can treat them, you know. So it's a really exciting time for me within the community.
It's really true modeling for you because you're still doing, I'm going to guess, as close to traditional mm-hmm. mom and wife stuff.
Yeah.
And being this amazing female entrepreneur. I think that's
exactly that. I'm
pretty cool.
Yeah, I make sure to be home every day for my son when he gets off the bus. I want him to see, again, my mother hounding on me, you're a Jewish mother, you better be home. So I have to keep everybody happy. But I make sure to be home for him when, you know, I do the traditional dinner. I do the traditional Shabbat dinner, cooking for everybody. And the first question I get from everybody is, how do you do it? That's like the number one question.
That was the next question I was going to ask you is, how do you do it?
You just have to be super organized. I love being busy. I really, truly love being busy. I think it's healthy. I think it's so healthy to be busy from the morning to the night. And you feel so good about yourself. It's like you go to sleep at night and you're like, what I do today. And you can say, check, 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 check. Gave my son a kiss. I washed his face. I gave him breakfast. I went to work. I had this podcast. I spoke to this one and that. Like, it's such a great feeling to know that you do so much in one day. Like, I'm not complaining. I'm so proud. It's such a great feeling.
Well, it sounds like the key for you is organization, which I think is important for everybody to remember. Rachel often says, what doesn't get scheduled doesn't get done.
It's 100% true. Yeah. Yeah, it is true.
I want to back up a little bit when you were talking about not being comfortable putting your name on it and being shy. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about because there are so many women who struggle with the whole imposter syndrome and not feeling ready and trying to be perfect before they roll something out. Can we talk a little bit about what held you back and not feeling comfortable with making a splash with your name?
Exactly what you just said. I mean, I'm not really that person. I don't think I'm as prepared. I don't think I had enough schooling. I don't think I'm smart enough. All of those things combined. I don't have the language skills. Everything that you can tell yourself no, everything that can hold you back. But again, like thinking of my grandmothers, if they can do it and they can survive, you can do this. Just go and do it. Literally just do it. And I listen a lot. I know this is so cliche, but I listen to Gary Vee a lot. And he's all about just do it. Get it done. And it really, so many times I do it on purpose. Like I'll listen to him just so he gives me that extra push and just do it. And you know, there's never going to be a day that you're going to wake up and say, oh, today is the perfect day for this to happen. Or today is the day I'm going to launch my brand. Just get it done. Start somewhere. And it's not going to happen overnight. And it's consistency and it's time. And just keep taking that little hammer and banging at it and just doing it again and again and again. And I find that's what works. And that's what starts sticking. And the beauty of building a brand for me and watching it is when you start any project, not only building a brand, is it's momentum. It starts and then the ball just keeps rolling and rolling and rolling. And then it just gets bigger and bigger, but keep doing the same thing again and again. You're never going to wake up one day and say, oh my gosh, my email list disappeared or my Instagram following disappeared. It's still there, but it's just going forward. It just keeps growing. So yeah, that's my advice to women. I'm still terrified and I'm still always nervous when I walk in the room, like, will I say the right thing? Or, you know, I screwed up. I mean, this happens daily, but you know, you just have to put your blinders on and just own it. Really. Trust me, I'm telling myself the same way I'm telling you.
Hey guys, really quick. Hate to interrupt. I know you're enjoying this episode. Just want to give a shout out to Dermavogue, our sponsor, Dermavogue.com. Dr. Turek and his wonderful staff over there help Gina and I look and feel our very best. Check them out, Dermavogue.com. Thanks so much to Dermavogue. Everyone notices, but no one really knows.
And I love the story, again, going back to the inspiration of your grandparents and that optimism of moving forward. I think about my own grandmother who, you know, had to take care of these five children by herself while my grandfather was forced to be a cobbler for the Nazis. And so my grandmother had to like really keep all these children together. And one of my uncles fell off one of the trains and it was like the last train out. We later found out, but she was able to get him back on. But I think about her strength and the time that I spent with her while she was alive. I used to always think, gosh, if she were like at my age, she would be the CEO of a company because she was so tough and organized and put together and just made everything happen. And I think having that kind of strength can build you really well.
Absolutely. I mean, did you hear about our strength, Women of Strength campaign that we're doing?
That was the next, that, right? That's exactly what I was about to ask about. I mean,
yeah. So there's something really, really exciting that I'm working on. It's launching in March. It is a campaign focused on women of strength. And how did this whole campaign come about? And I get really excited when I speak about this because I was sitting with my creative team and we were speaking about, you know, women empowerment, how that's such a big thing right now. And, you know, just not only in the industry, but in the world itself, really focusing on women and how amazing it is. And my team asked me, Frida, like, who do you consider to be an empowered woman? And of course, I always go back to my grandmothers. I'm like, for me, it's my grandmothers. I mean, they are the classic badass women. I mean, they survived. They were teenagers. They did whatever it took to survive. And, you know, we just start speaking and they said, are there still Holocaust survivors that are still alive, knowing that my grandmothers are not alive? I said, actually, there are these two sisters that I grew up with. One of their granddaughters was my really good friend. I think that they're alive and well. Let me find out. Call my friend. And I said, how's your grandmother and her sister? Is your grandmother healthy? She says, yes, everybody's okay. They're still living at home. My grandmother's 104 and her sister is 96. I said, okay, I'm going to ask you another question. I'm thinking of doing some kind of campaign focused on women of strength. Would they want to be the face of this campaign? And again, like being super different, like I grew up in the fashion industry. I've been to all the parties and at the Cipriani and the award ceremony and everything. And I'm like, I want to do something different. Like I want to focus and highlight different empowered women, not like the traditional, you know, traditional CEO or, you know, let me do something different. And I asked my friend, she says, I'm not even asking them. The answer is yes, they must do it. I want them to be the face of your campaign. I want their story to be told. And they have such incredible stories. I said, wonderful, great. She calls her great aunt, says, are you willing to do this campaign? She's like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't want you to glamorize, you know, my story. If you ask Mrs. Horowitz, who runs this program for survivors, and she approves it, then I'll do it. So great. I get my whole professional voice on, getting prepared to speak to Mrs. Horowitz and ask her if it's okay for these survivors to be the face of the campaign. Call Mrs. Horowitz. We're talking. Ends up being Mrs. Horowitz had stayed in my home a couple of months before as a guest for a neighbor asked me to host her. She's like, I'll do anything for you, Frida. Of course, I'm going to make sure, but I'm asking you one favor. Before you go to shoot this campaign, I'd like you to come and join some of these survivors for lunch. They gather here every day. Just meet some of them and talk to them. I said, absolutely, it would be my honor. So this comes the day of the shoot. The shoot's scheduled for 3:00, working around the survivor schedule. And I go to the local Y where these women get together for lunch. And of course, I was really nervous and scared to speak to them about this campaign I want to do. And I get up and, you know, since I am the granddaughter of survivors, they'll listen to me a little bit more. And I'm obviously very sensitive to their stories. And I explain to them what I'm doing, that I'm highlighting women of strength and I chose them because of their strength. And, you know, and I'd love to go around the table and speak to some of them and hear their stories. So I start with the first woman. She's about 4'11", tiny little lady. I start speaking to her and she's holding my hand and she's like, I love what you're doing. And she tells me that when she was 9 years old, she hid in a cellar for 6 years until she was 15, how she ran to the forest, to the partisans. And then they sent her back because they said she was too short because her legs were too short. She was too small and how the woman she stayed by couldn't feed her. So she wouldn't eat for, and I'm like listening to her story. And I'm like, this is like a bunch of Anne Franks in this room. I'm like, have you ever shared your story with anybody? She's like, no. I'm like, what do you mean no? Like, your story is incredible. Like, that's what movies are made about. And then I move on to the next woman, and she has a story similar to her, like crazy stuff. And I left that room after like 2 hours of speaking to these women so inspired. And I said, I need to do something for them where their stories are told. Like, I don't want their stories ever not to be told. They're so incredible, you know, and I'm thinking of like kids that are dealing with depression or people that are, their day is not going that great. And just hearing their stories of hope and faith and continuing to live on, I think is so inspirational. So we did the photo shoot later in the day. It was incredible with the two sisters. They shared their story. They showed us candlesticks that they went to go dig up after the war. I mean, it's all recorded. It's incredible, incredible stories. from that day, I decided I want to throw a party, a luncheon, celebrating their strength. We're not going to focus on the sad things that they went through, but we're going to focus on what they did when they came here. Like, how did you rebuild? Like, how'd you do that? How do you stand up straight and continue to smile after what you've been through, after your entire family's wiped out? And within 3 weeks, I put together a luncheon. It was called the Women of Strength Luncheon here in my Brooklyn office. We had 55 female Holocaust survivors come through the doors. We had the New York Post was here, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Associated Press. We had tons of press covering the event. We had Shalom Lemmer, who's a universal recording artist, the first Hasidic universal recording artist, was here for the luncheon. And I had him standing on a stage with his back facing the New York City skyline and the Statue of Liberty to his right. And the survivors were all watching him, and they were looking at the skyline of New York. And the entire luncheon was focused on their strength. And it just was the most incredible moving. I had my girls take off from school, and it was just like you felt it in the air. There was something special. It was just a feel of joy in the room itself. And my favorite part of the whole, I mean, even after all the interviews that they gave to the press, towards the end, no one told them to do this, but they just stood up and started to dance in a circle. And you had like the news like was in the center just filming them, and just they had these big smiles on their faces, and they were just dancing. And, you know, of course, I was dancing with them and my daughters and my mother and my father. Like, we were all here. And there was just so much joy in the room. And I told myself, if I did one thing in my life and I got their stories to be told, I'm happy. Because of that luncheon, last Monday was the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. 195 news outlets picked up their stories nationwide and had their stories told. So I just felt so happy that their stories were told. It meant so much to me because my grandmother's stories were never told. Nobody, their lives that they led, and they went to their graves with their stories. I mean, of course, our grandchildren know the stories, but I'm talking about the world, their incredible, incredible strength. And when these women left, I gave them each a gift with a bracelet that had the word strength on it. And a couple of days later, they invited me to some event at the memorial in New York City. And I come in and they all start waving at me. It was a Hanukkah party. They all start waving to me, wearing the strength bracelet and the numbers on their arm. They're like, Frida, they're like yelling. And it was just so special to me. I felt so, it was just incredible, incredible. And just being able to highlight these women of strength and telling their stories and being able to give back to them, we're launching this strength bracelet, and the proceeds of that bracelet is going to go back to help these survivors, to feed them, clothe them, anything that they need to make their lives more pleasant, and just to live their lives in a happy way. So I've even noticed, which is so incredible, that my team, the staff here, walk into work with like a more of a jump in their step. Like, they feel like their days are more meaningful. They're working for a company that's not just focused on fashion, but it is also focused on something higher, like a higher meaning, and everybody,
a bigger purpose.
And that is like, I'm so happy that they felt it that day, and they felt it in the room when these women came in. Like, one of my employees said, you know, even when she touches me on my arm, like, it just goes through me, like their strength. It's been an incredible, incredible journey. I'm so excited for the launch to talk about it in March. Nervous, of course, because their story is so huge, but I'm gonna, you know, because it's true and it means something to me, hopefully it's gonna translate, and I'm just really honored to be a part of that. Sorry that was so long, but I'm super excited about it.
Don't say sorry.
I'm passionate.
Don't say sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we were all engaged, and our listeners will be engaged as well, because it's such a powerful story, and a story of purpose too. When we think about business, how important it is for a business to have a why and to have a purpose that keeps people inspired and engaged, and not just about creating a product for someone to buy.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, and because I've been doing that for so long, and I'm so happy that I found something that I could connect to, and I can also tell the story of their strength. it just makes every day more meaningful. So it's been incredible.
Yeah, and this, it's so important to have those kind of stories shared with the world in today's day and age, because, you know, there's so much noise, there's so much negativity because, you know, somebody feels slighted. Oh, someone slighted me, you know, like online chatter and the things that those women have lived, they just must chuckle inside at any of that stuff that's going on today where people, you know.
Of course. Yeah. And actually it's made me tougher too. I mean, of course I'm born and raised in Brooklyn. I'm automatically tough, but my grandmothers are like, don't let everything, you know, hurt you. Like, it's okay. Let it slide, let it go, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. And that is a big reason why I chose Women of Strength, focus on the women. And because there's so much, like, you know, that depression in kids, and I'm like, don't be depressed. There's so much in your future, and you know, if anybody can survive it, you can too. You know, if they survived Auschwitz, they can. You can survive whatever it is you're going through. So hopefully, if I'm able to even inspire one person, you know, then I know my job's done.
I am telling you, I have a daughter who is right now in the tween stage, and those kids, like, there's a lot. I'm trying to be a good listener to some of these scenarios that I have to, like, Google it, first of all, to see what they're talking about. But, like, there's a lot of stuff they're dealing with and they don't know how to navigate it because they aren't always presented with stories of women and children. As you said, that woman who shared being 9 and all the way to 15 being in a cellar, like, that's a big deal for kids to hear that you can survive and live a wonderful life. You can survive middle school, y'all. But they don't sometimes think that they can. Exactly. These children, there's one school in our area that the high school has had like 9 suicides in the last couple of years. Oof. And these kids it's a very privileged area of society. Mm-hmm. And these kids still mm-hmm. don't know where to find strength. And I give you huge props for what you're doing, because that's what young women need to hear, so that they can believe that they can survive high school and middle school, you know, do something huge.
Absolutely. And you know, I have a 13-year-old girl and a 15-year-old girl, 2 daughters, and I had them come to the luncheon, and I purposely brought them over to these women. And I said, please share your story with my daughters. And she holds my daughter's hand and she goes, she repeats the story to her, and you know, it was incredible. I'm like, I want them to hear this, and I saw how moved they were. I saw, you know, and those are the lessons. Like, I know that her little—I mean, for her, it doesn't feel so little and small, but I know that's how she thinks now. Like, I can do this. I met that woman, and she's a female. Like, I think being the female part of it was so important to me. Like, if a girl, and not even a woman, she was a little girl. She's a little girl, and she kept her faith too. She continued to believe in God. Even that to me was incredible. Like, how do you continue to believe in God after what you went through? So hearing those stories were also unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Shifting mm-hmm. gears, not wanting to take away from how amazing that is, but can you talk for a second about your jewelry line itself, and like, who would love your jewelry? Like, for someone who's listening, who's enraptured by how powerful you are, like, who would love your jewelry, and what is it like?
The jewelry really is, it's classic with a twist. It goes with everything. It's all sterling silver base metal. I'm known for that mixed metal look that I do. I use a lot of darkened rhodiums, kind of that grit of Brooklyn, with lots of sparkle too. So it really has that grit to glamour moment. The beauty of the collection is that you can take it from day to night. You can just wear your little, you know, dainty necklace during the day and then just layer up longer chains for a more evening look. I'm really known for that stacking look. We use the hashtag start your stack and really build your stack. And every season you can add more color, more vibrancy to your original signature stack that you have. And, you know, in the morning I love just like throwing it on and just finishes your outfit. You're just wearing your little white shirt and black skirt or whatever it is, your little black dress. And it just finishes your entire look when you put the jewels on and your little stack. And it really, there's something for everyone within the collection, mom, daughter. The price point is just right. It sits between $200 and $550. And I purposely chose that price point to sit in that white space where you can wear it with your fine. It's great travel jewelry. And, it's just great every day, day to night jewelry.
Well, my birthday's coming up, so I might just send my husband over to take a look.
You absolutely should. Absolutely.
I'm curious on, because these stories are so powerful, that you've shared, and we all have stories, and all women have stories of strength and courage. Do you design any of your work? Does any of your jewelry have like an inspiration behind it of like, oh, this piece is, in, I was inspired by that story?
So the strength bracelet is specifically for their stories. It's the women of strength. And it literally has the word strength in that mixed metal. And they all live in Brooklyn. Just so you know, all these women that I met are all living here and they raise their children here in Brooklyn. And I purposely wanted to choose women that lived locally. I call them heroes among us. And I used the black and gold, which is the black top is of New York City, the street tops of New York City. I use like a black texture. So combining the Brooklyn aesthetic together with the word strength, that is specifically for these women, the women of strength. As far as the other collections, a lot of it is taken from the architecture of Brooklyn. It could be the cobblestone streets. It can be the chain link fence. It could be anything that's architecturally around, especially around my office. You probably can't see the background behind me, but I'm facing to my right a federal prison. Right after that is this huge smokestack dating back from the early 1800s. We have the Brooklyn Navy Yard, the terminal, Brooklyn Navy terminals to my right, where it was the port for they had the most ships leave here during World War II, which was right here in Brooklyn. There's a lot of history here. And then, of course, you have that modern architecture around me, too. We have a train that passes by that I really think I was transported back to the early 1900s. I can't believe this train is still running. And, you have to wait for it to pass when you're crossing to get to your office. So the entire vibe is a very, I just find the beauty in it. Like, it's so artistic to me and it has the, that grit to it. And, of course I have to add, my job is to add the glam to it.
You definitely do. There was, I'm curious, you are, you don't follow the pack mentality of fashion. Can you tell us what that means?
Well, on one side, it's the campaigns that I'm running to. I don't necessarily, fashion tends to have one direction or, one vision, and I don't necessarily follow that path. I go with what I feel is best for my customers, A, in my campaigns, and B, also as far as my design. I don't necessarily follow the trend per se. If everybody's wearing a certain ear game, I want to be different. Of course, I'll stay within trend, but I'll design for my customer's lifestyle. We'll definitely want to be on trend and we want to be fashion forward, but I don't necessarily chase it. And the funny part is, like, I designed my holiday collection was all in this gorgeous sapphire blue, and it ended up being, it was the Pantone color of the year for 2020. And I'm like, hey, so it's really just following your customers, understanding who wears the jewelry, who wears the handbags, the eyewear, and really designing for her lifestyle. So again, I do go to a lot of events and conferences and understand what's on trend and what's happening, but I'm really focused on, my clients' needs and their lifestyles.
Which is really important, I think, in any business, any entrepreneur, when you really understand who your customer is and you focus on that versus throwing it out there and to the masses. It sounds like you're really focused on knowing who your customer is.
And we're working on that every single day. Sometimes we look at her age or we look at what she does all the time, because it's the number one key factor in the business. I want everybody to understand who we're working for. I'm working for her. I'm not working for myself. I'm working for her. How to make her life more glamorous, how to, complete her outfit, whatever it is, because once you know who she is, it just makes your job so much easier. Instead of chasing that friend and, oh my God, am I doing it? Work for her. Don't work for what your buyer is looking for. Work for her. Who is that end consumer? And that has really helped me with my design process for sure.
I think we can all relate to that. I know in our business, from a training perspective of being really, really clear who our audience is and who our audience is not.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
And you don't want every customer. You need to know who the right customer, right?
And
Rachel's laughing about
that. No, but it is totally true. Yeah. Yeah. No, because sometimes,
what's that, Rachel?
Yeah, you want to be something for everyone, or like, oh my God, everybody's wearing this look or this bag. Is that who your customer is? No, it's not. So don't waste your time. Focus on who she is and just make it even better. Instead of being, spreading yourself so thin, putting yourself all over the place. I used to do that. And a motto in my business is that you learn from your mistakes. And that was actually a big mistake. It's like, chasing that, and then you're nothing for nobody, instead of being fantastic at what you do.
Yeah. And then you go out of business.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's ironic. I actually know a jewelry designer who lives in Brooklyn, and he's a client of mine, and he's worked a variety of places. I won't name names because I don't want to put it out there company wise, but known names. And the last company he had worked for, there was no clear vision on the different lines. Mm-hmm. And that's why the company started to suffer, because they were just throwing everything at the wall to see what would stick without any true understanding. And I would ask him, I'm like, who is the customer? He's like, we still don't know.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's like every day. It's like, who is she? Who is she? What is she like? What does she wear? What brands does she wear? And we do that all day long, because it's the key to building your business. It really is.
So, nice little segue into, is there an aspect of a woman that you would find sexy that's your ideal customer?
Got to think about that.
And more specifically, how would you describe a person that is sexy?
I think a strong woman is sexy. I think someone that's powerful, to me, I'm like, good. Like, I like when a woman stands on her own two feet, kind of like myself. just, like I said in the beginning, just get it done. A woman that can handle a lot and still smile and do her thing, to me, that's very sexy. And I think it's attractive across the board. It doesn't necessarily have to be in business. It could even be how you run your home. Like, own it. Run your home. You are the queen of the house. You're the mother of the house. You set the tone. If it's going to be a great day in your workplace and your home, sometimes we blame our husbands or we blame our partners or whatever it is. You really set the tone. And somebody that understands that and has that knowledge, I think, is very powerful in any setting. And I think that's very attractive.
Nice. That is one of our signature questions we do when we're kind of coming to an end. And so the next question, best advice you've ever been given by another woman or a man, as a matter of fact?
It may sound cliche, but it's really, you learn from your mistakes. I mean, make those mistakes. It happens in business every single day, and it happens in parenting, and it happens in being a wife, and you just know not to do them again. I mean, I have said such stupid things sometimes, and I've done things that, and it really has taught me. I've like not slept the next three nights because I messed up so bad, but trust me, I've never done it again. And that has taught me, I'm really very self-taught. Everything that I did, the business that I built, is really self-taught. So there's nothing like being thrown in on the job or being thrown into a meeting. And obviously you want to come in prepared, but making those mistakes. And I've learned that from a mentor who told me, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to learn from them. And it's so, so, so true. And don't be afraid that you made those mistakes, because it's going to happen for sure.
You know what I love about that? We talk about this in improv, right? So our training company is improv based. So that's the tool that we use to get people out of their headspace, but also to encourage failure. Because it's in the failure where the funny comes from a comedy perspective, but it's in the failure where innovation happens. And so I've embraced this whole concept of, I look forward to failing. How can I fail? Where can I make a mistake? Versus, oh my gosh, I hope I don't make a mistake. Sometimes I have days where I'm like, gosh, I hope I make a mistake because I need something new to create.
I don't think I've ever said that, but you know what? It's a great way to look at it, though. It really is. And you're right that the comedy comes from that. Like, we did an event at West Point probably 2 months ago, and, you know, felt really glamorous speaking to the cadets about our Women of Strength campaign and doing all of that. And we leave West Point on a high, and I got this huge flat tire. And I'm standing on this rainy road in the middle of a dark street near West Point, and I'm like, you know, this is where the comedy comes from. It's like, you know, yes. Yeah, so it was a great experience, and we always go back to that, you know, the flat tire in the middle of the dark road, and thank God we got help and all, but, you know, that's really where your best times, and you learn from those.
Yeah, well, comedy definitely comes from relatability, that's for sure.
We can all relate to the flat tire.
Yeah.
So speaking exactly. of mistakes and learning from them, any advice that you wish you had been given early on?
I still agree with the, I think, and a piece of advice I wish I got earlier on, because I think I wasted a lot of time, was the consistency piece of it. Not being all over. Stay focused. You're known for that black and gold look, that mixed metal look. People love you for it. Stick with it and just make it better and better and better. And I used to have a ton of product on my website. I used to have a ton of offerings to my customers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought that was good to have tons of customer choices. And I would give them 400 bracelets and 600 earrings to choose from. And it was too much. It was just too much. So that, I would say about a year and a half ago only, is when I had a planner in here and she's like, okay, that's it. You got to start scaling back. Your customers are confused. It's too much. Start. I'm like, no, but I love that one. And I love that one. No, scale back. Less is more. And we literally have those words spelled out in huge letters across the office now. Less is more. Focus on what really works for you, what you're known for, where your successes are, and don't confuse the customer. Give her less.
I was just going to say that we talk about this in sales, that a confused mind doesn't buy. And
it's
when
true.
You give too many options and too many choices, it overwhelms the buyer, and then they don't buy. They back off.
Exactly. So that is something I wish someone told me 7 years ago, because I was like, and my business doubled. It's doing better now. And I'm offering them a quarter, 25% of what I offered them before. So it's incredible to see. It's like, okay, I just cleared all the garbage, and not that it was garbage, it was all gorgeous, but I just, all that clutter, got rid of it, and like laser focused on the best of the best and giving our customers a clean, clear experience.
I am so there, because just listening to you say that you used to have that many choices gave me anxiety, because I'm glad you said that, because
right?
I am that consumer. I like nice stuff, but if there's too many choices, I shut it down. I like three choices. Like a dinner menu with three choices, that the book of choices, I shut right down. I get having anxiety.
Me too. It's like, I totally hear you. Yeah.
It's like going to TGI Friday and they've got like the 35 page menu and I totally can't handle it. And I will tell the server, just tell me what I should eat.
That's exactly what it is. It really is. So that I wish I can help anyone today. I'm so happy to give that message, because less is truly more. It really, really is. Get rid of all the clutter and you'll see your business begin to rise.
That's really great advice for all of our listeners, to think about staying in your lane, not trying to be something to everybody, and perfect what it is that you do to be successful.
Yes, absolutely.
That's awesome. It has been awesome having you on the show today,
Frida. Thank you.
This is exciting because this episode will be posting while you are launching the line. So I think that's going to be really cool that it's going to go hand in hand. So everything happens for a reason.
It really does.
For people to get in touch with you, learn more about your lines, what is the best way for them? We'll put this, you know, on our website and our show notes. What is the best way for them to connect with you and your products?
I love for them to follow me on Instagram because you see the good, the bad, and the ugly on the stories. I will show you the flat tire. I will show you all of that awesome. In stories. So Instagram would be Frida Rothman, and it's spelled with an E-I. So it's Frida Rothman, at Frida Rothman. And of course, the website, FridaRothman.com, Frida Rothman on Facebook. But Instagram really gives you the feel and the vibe of the brand.
That's awesome. Great. Well, again, thank you again for your time today.
It was my pleasure.
And thanks to all of our listeners, to our Warners for listening to this episode of Women Your Mother Warned You About, and to our sponsor, Dermavogue, who keeps Rachel and I prettier than we already are. We love Dr. Turk and his staff. To connect with me directly or learn more about Pivot 10 Results and Carolina Improv, you can find me on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com or ginatremarco.com.
And to connect with me, Rachel Pitts, you can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender or thesinginglender.com and find all our social media links, including links to Mr. Keith, who's not with us today, sadly, and free downloads on our website at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Hey, we're going to have to tell Keith that he should buy us some jewelry.
I love it. Thank you so much for having me. I hope it went well, and I hope your listeners are able to learn something today.
Awesome. Thank you, Frida.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
And hey, if you love this show, show the love and share with a friend, colleague, or client. Just one way to give value with a free resource to others and a way to strengthen those business relationships without expecting anything in return. And Warners, keep on keeping it sexy. And remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.